This is NPR News. I'm Marianne Combs, in for Tom Weber. There's a national conversation going on around sexual harassment right now in the wake of news about movie mogul Harvey Weinstein. This hour, we'll look at sexual harassment in a place that can be a hotbed for it, the theater. We want to hear about your experiences and what you think needs to be done about it. But first, an update on a related news story. DFL State Senator Dan Schoen is under growing pressure to resign after several women accused him of improper sexual conduct. The accusations were published yesterday by MinnPost. NPR political editor Mike Mulcahy joins me now. Good morning, Mike.
Morning, Maria.
What exactly are the accusations against State Senator Dan Schoen?
Well, in this MinnPost article, two women spoke on the record. Lindsay Port was a former House candidate back in 2015. She said that Dan Schoen, who's a state senator from St. Paul Park, made a pretty derogatory comment about her body and touched her inappropriately and repeated it. And she complained at the time to Aaron Murphy, who was a state representative and the deputy minority leader. And apparently, from what we know from Paul Thiessen, who was the DFL leader at the time, he says that he did talk to Schoen and told him to knock it off and told him that was unacceptable. Of course, we also know that at the legislature, these complaints are confidential. So there was nothing public at the time. If there were a complaint now, a formal complaint, it wouldn't be public. Thiessen said he didn't realize that the behavior continued. Also in the MinnPost article, Aaron May Quaid, who's now a member of the legislature, said that Schoen made what she considered to be improper contact with her, just in terms of inviting her to meet with him repeatedly. And she said she did not at the time make a formal complaint against him.
Are there any other complaints out there that we know of, aside from those two that were in the MinnPost reporting?
The story said that other women had complained, but they did not go public in the story.
Mm. So how has Schoen responded to these accusations?
He put out a statement last night basically saying that he basically denying that he intended to harass anyone. He said the allegations were either completely false or had been taken out of context. He said that he denied he did anything inappropriate with anyone, but at the same time, he also said if anyone perceived that, he apologized for it.
So what if he doesn't resign? People have called for his resignation.
As you said, the pressure is growing. It's coming from within his own party. The DFL minority leader of the state Senate, Tom Bach, put out a statement last night saying that he had heard these allegations yesterday. He had met with other top Democrats in the Senate and that they had told Schoen he should resign. That pressure has picked up. Aaron Murphy put out a statement last night saying he should resign. Some of the other gubernatorial candidates on the DFL side have, and we just heard in the last few minutes, Governor Mark Dayton and Lieutenant Governor Tina Smith have called for him to resign.
So can they force him to resign?
Well, at least as of last night, he had said he had no intention to resign. There's also word this morning from the Republicans who control the Senate that if he doesn't resign, they would file an ethics complaint against him. That would start a process in the Senate where the Ethics Committee would meet and examine the allegations, issue some sort of formal recommendation. If at that point a member of the legislature, member of the Senate still wouldn't resign, the Senate could vote to expel somebody if the Senate were in session.
Given that these women felt recently emboldened to speak up about their experiences with State Senator Dan Schoen, do you expect that we'll hear more accusations against other lawmakers at the Capitol?
Well, as you know, we have seen these allegations and accusations coming out pretty much across society in the past few weeks. It's happened in other state capitals. I would expect there would be more.
All right. Mike Mulcahy, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
That's NPR News' political editor, Mike Mulcahy. Issues of sexual assault and harassment can have long-lasting effects and consequences. Just this week, Jason McClain, the former owner of the Varsity Theater and Loring Pasta Bar in Minneapolis, was charged for sexually abusing a minor at the Children's Theater Company in Minneapolis in the 1980s. McClain repeatedly failed to appear in court and is believed to have fled to Mexico. The judgment is in the first of five civil cases against McLean stemming from his time teaching at the Children's Theater. The theater is a defendant in the other four cases. This hour, we're focusing on sexual misconduct in theaters. Earlier this year, Minnesota Public Radio's Catherine Richard reported on sexual harassment by a prominent theater director in Rochester, Minnesota. She joins me now in studio. Good morning, Catherine.
Good morning, Marianne.
Remind our listeners of the circumstances surrounding the story at Rochester Civic Theater.
Sure, I'll do that. But first, I want to start out by making an important disclosure, and that is that our regional manager, Kay Hawker, for Minnesota Public Radio, she's based in Rochester, is also the board president of the Rochester Civic Theater. At the time that we were reporting the story, she was president-elect. For that position. So a little bit of background here. This story involved a man named Gregory Stavro. He was a very prominent member of the Rochester arts community. And about 10 years ago, he was recruited from the Twin Cities to be the executive director of the Rochester Civic Theater. During that period of time, he was praised for, raising new money for the theater, making it a more visible and prominent part of the community. But also during this time, he was sexually harassing women who volunteered at the theater and also worked at the theater. Previous board members knew about his behavior, observed his behavior, but they failed to stop it during that 10-year period. And earlier this spring, the public statement was that he was leaving the theater after 10 good years on a high note and resigned, ostensibly by his own volition. Shortly thereafter, these complaints started to surface.
So what were the nature of some of the complaints?
Well, I'm going to let a young woman named Beth Brophy describe this. Unlike most of the women I spoke with, Beth was a 7-year paid employee for a summer program at the theater. A lot of the other people I spoke with were just volunteers, but she actually was getting paid by the theater during this period of time. She put up with Stavro's behavior for a long period of time, and she simply learned to manage it.
I actually changed what I would wear to the camps. If I wore a dress or something remotely revealing, he would... this is just a thing that we got used to as women, that if you had visible shoulders, he would stand near and find an excuse to just put his hand on your shoulders, snug in close to his side for a hug, comments on lovely skin, play with our hair, that sort of thing. I think for most of us, it felt very small, that it was just, I feel uncomfortable about this, but I don't have a good reason for why, so we just avoided him after that.
Aside from changing the way you dressed, was there anything else that you did to make sure that you weren't in a situation that you felt uncomfortable in?
Never be in the same room alone. Just grabbing another person if I ever needed to go into the office to make copies or get something done.
Talk to me about these two incidences that you detail in your letter.
Yep, I was in the staff room. It was again an incident of he came over, he put both hands on my shoulders, and then pulled me close to him into a hug. It felt far past anything like a friendly boss relationship, and to the point that I actually tried to squirm away and make some excuse like I need to go now, but he actually tightened down so I couldn't pull out of the hug. And I finally said, I have to get to class. And he held me out by the shoulders and said, I would be delighted to see more of you. And the words themselves are harmless, but the tone of to see more of you, to me, seemed to be implying more of my body or some sort of advance.
Well, did he give a reason for the hug?
He would open with something like, it's lovely to see you, marvelous to see you. He's an incredibly gregarious, friendly person.
Yeah.
A lot of us didn't say anything. It's the sense of, well, maybe he's just being friendly. Maybe this is just the way he is. But it felt so gross and uncomfortable. And to the point that myself and the other women would chat about it, like, have you ever felt this way? And I get the same, just don't be alone in a room with Gregory.
Yeah. So you say in your letter that after the hug, there was an incident 2 or 3 days later.
Yeah. At a Friday night party, so there would be music out on the patio. Gregory would often offer people glasses of wine. That was a known thing. He offered me a glass of wine, and I accepted it. And then while I was holding the wine, he put an arm around my shoulders. There had been a bit of greeting and small talk, but then pulled me to him and kissed me on the mouth. And that was another, I have to push him away and get out of it. And I gave some stupid excuse of I have a boyfriend to try to deflect, but there's definitely this sense of you're my boss, you provide my paycheck, I don't want to make a scene that would affect that, but you did just grab me and kiss me in public, what do I do here? And, you know, I was 19, I was starting to teach and trying not to make a fuss.
That was Beth Brophy, one of the victims of Gregory Stavro's alleged sexual harassment at the Rochester Civic Theater. Catherine Richard, how has Stavro responded to these allegations?
Well, he hasn't. The theater now has a host of other issues they're dealing with. And we did reach out to him many, many times through friends, family, email, phone calls over the course of many weeks, too, when we were reporting this. You know, fast forward to today, though, the theater has a large group of volunteers that spent, you know, decades volunteering at the theater. And there continues to be some conflict between these volunteers and the theater board leadership and executive, you know, interim executive director. And I would say a few weeks ago, the theater made an ask for emergency funding from the city council after lower than expected ticket sales over the summer. I do just want to point something else out that Beth was talking about. I think what she described and what many, many other people described to me as I was reporting this is that Stavro's behavior was pretty widely observed and known. It was not something that was happening necessarily behind closed doors. It was out there. It took many years for there to be sort of a groundswell of we won't tolerate this anymore before these allegations came forward, actually in a pretty large batch earlier this year.
Mm. Thanks, Catherine. We're going to have NPR's Catherine Richard stay with us as we continue this conversation about sexual harassment in Minnesota theaters, and we open this up more broadly. And we're also going to welcome your calls. If you've experienced harassment while working at a theater, did you report it? How did it affect you? We're not asking people to name names. In fact, we ask that you not name names, but simply help our listeners to understand the extent of the problem. And if you run a theater company, how do you ensure that you're creating a safe space for everyone? We'd love to hear from you. You can reach us at 1-800-242-2828. That's 1-800-242-2828. If you're in the Twin Cities metro area, you can call us at 651-227-6000. That's 651-227-6000. A while back, I sat down with Leah Cooper to talk about sexual harassment in theater. Cooper is co-director of the theater company Wonderlust Productions. She's a freelance director at many theaters in the Twin Cities, and she's the former director of the Minnesota Theater Alliance. Cooper says in theater, it can be particularly difficult to navigate the gray areas around harassment.
Partly because in performance, it's often our job to be emotionally vulnerable with each other, to even be sexual with each other on stage. And in rehearsal, we're often exploring that territory in a way where it's in the room.
And then also there are power dynamics in theater companies.
Yeah. I mean, one of the intrinsic challenges in theater is that some people have salaries and positions of stability and are in positions of power to hire, and other people are only ever hired on a project-by-project contract basis. And they're often hired not just on their skill, but on word of mouth about how they are to work with. So when you're somebody who is in a position of really wanting a job, and there's more people who want that job than there are jobs, that's yet another layer of power dynamics. So actors in particular are kind of at the bottom of that power hierarchy. And just as it is their job to be emotionally vulnerable in their work, it is also the work setting that they have no power at all. And every actor knows that if they upset a director, that director's never going to hire them again. They also know that director might tell other directors that they are difficult. I put that in air quotes because that's just one of those awful dirty words in our industry where if you say an actor is difficult, everybody goes, oh no, I never want to work with them again. But that word difficult is used to describe all kinds of behavior, including behavior that is sometimes just trying to defend actors' boundaries.
Have you ever witnessed this?
or experienced this as somebody who's worked in the theater community?
Well, and to be honest, as a director, I haven't experienced it myself. I'm often in a position of hiring and power, so I've been quite privileged to not be sexually harassed as a woman. I have seen inappropriate behavior between actors, one actor paying too much attention outside of the scenes to another actor, making them feel harassed, making them feel violated. And, I've had a conversation with the actor. I've often, in turn, had a conversation then with the management at the theater. And to my surprise, I rarely see any repercussions for that actor.
I noticed that you were very careful about using gender-neutral pronouns when talking about who's doing the harassing and who's being harassed and who has the power and who doesn't have the power. Is that a commentary on the fact that it's not necessarily men who are harassing just women in this industry?
Well, I'll be honest, I hear about it most often from women talking about men harassing them, but that is definitely not the only thing I've heard. It does go both ways, so to speak. It goes all ways, to be honest. I have heard stories of men, male actors, feeling harassed by fellow female actresses. I've heard men complaining about male directors harassing them. It's all about violating boundaries. It doesn't really matter what gender or orientation you are. It's all about unwanted sexual attention. There's such an environment of secrecy. I can't tell you how many actors have told me a story where they were harassed to a degree that they no longer felt able to do their job well, where they no longer felt safe in their workplace, where they questioned even staying in the industry because it is such a common practice and it is such an accepted practice. When they talk to friends and colleagues, they're often told, well, yeah, but, that just happens. And there's nothing you can do because if you complain, you're going to be branded difficult. And every time I hear this, I think the more we accept it, the more we say it is standard practice, the more we make it acceptable, and we end up trapped in our own environment of secrecy. And I just wish those in power would recognize that it is not on the victim's part to figure out how to deal with this. They have no power. And frankly, I know it has chased people right out of the industry, talented, skilled, hardworking people who have just quit because it undermined their sense of safety and sense of self. And it's really on the people in power to recognize that this is happening, to recognize that they're the only ones who can change it, and to have a compassionate and safe, clear, transparent protocol so that people know how to deal with it.
That was theater director Leah Cooper. We're talking this hour about sexual harassment in Minnesota theaters. I'd now like to welcome two guests to the conversation. Performer Hannah Weideven is a founder of Fair Play, a volunteer organization that advocates for women in improv theater. Welcome, Hannah.
Good morning.
And we're also joined by Carolyn Palmer, public and legal affairs manager at the Minnesota Coalition Against Sexual Assault. Carolyn, thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you.
Hannah Weideven, when I talked to Leah Cooper, we were talking about traditional theater. There's a script, and actors memorize their parts and basically act out the same story on stage night after night. But you're involved in improv theater, which is all about coming up with ideas and stories in the moment. Are there problems with sexual harassment that are particular to improv theater?
Sure. I think what Leah said about vulnerability is particularly true in improv because you have to be able to trust the team that you're working with to the point where you can do things on stage that are completely made up on the spot and that you know will fly with them. And because of that, there's also lots of opportunity to cross people's boundaries. For example, someone might initiate a stage kiss, which is something that you didn't rehearse beforehand and is certainly an opportunity to make somebody feel uncomfortable or cross their boundaries. And beyond that, there's also this idea of, in comedy in general, that you need to be sort of game to play. And you need to be able to like hang with everyone, and being somebody who stands up and says that this doesn't feel comfortable, this isn't right, often makes you labeled, like Leah said, as difficult.
Well, and also, I mean, one of the key phrases used in improv theater is yes and, the idea that you will always agree to and build on what the person has suggested in the scene. That idea of yes, I agree, consent, is the exact opposite of where many people feel they need to go in a system, in a situation of sexual harassment, where it's like, oh, I need to stand up for my boundaries and say no. But that's something that's against the rule book of improv.
Well, exactly. And I think that's part of the thing that happens in classes that's particularly problematic there, is that we teach that idea of yes and we forget to include that the idea of yes and really just means that you're saying yes to the circumstances, which are the circumstances in some situation might be that someone is making you uncomfortable. The and might mean that you change the situation. Yes, this situation makes me uncomfortable and I'm going to do something about it is just as valid.
Mm. Why did you create Fair Play?
Well, a lot of things started coming up about a year and a half ago, coming out of like LA theaters, New York theaters, articles written about harassment that happening from directors and from teachers and from other improvisers. And we just started having that conversation here, saying to each other, is this something that we're experiencing? Is this something we need to be concerned about? And people started to share their stories. And the next thing we knew, we had this online group of about 80 women and sharing all of their stories and things they had experienced in the improv community. And a few of us decided that we were going to do something about it. So we held like a really small election within the community, and five of us ended up on this leadership team. And that's everything kind of spawned from there.
So how do you advocate for victims?
Well, we do it in a few ways. Our primary role is as educators. So we work with theaters, we work with improvisers, we make recommendations to teams, to our community for things that need to change in order for people to be safer and hopefully just dissuade people who are harassers from even entering our community because it's so difficult to do. It's so difficult to get away with. And then part of that is also addressing issues that have been persistent for a long time and issues that come up now. And sometimes that'll look like we might meet with somebody individually and talk to them. We might meet with an improviser who has a complaint and then support that person when they go talk to the person they have a complaint about. Or we might help write reports and then send them to theaters.
Mm. I spoke to several people about this topic in preparation for this show, and one actress said something that was particularly striking to me. She said, the theater scene is broken and poisonous toward women, particularly young women. Would you agree with that statement?
Yeah, 100%. And I would say that particularly young women, but also particularly new women to the scene. So I think in improv, we sort of think of your improv age versus your actual age, because there might be some younger improvisers who've actually been improvising for quite a long time. When you first enter, there's a whole new world that you're trying to understand. And the people that sort of are the gatekeepers to that, they determine your understanding. And I think what this person was talking about is that those gatekeepers tend to be the most problematic people.
Hmm. Carolyn Palmer, if a performer, in other words, we're talking about a short-term contract employee, experiences sexual harassment or assault, what can they do?
Well, they may have some options, but I would also underscore that anytime you pursue one of those options, you are putting yourself out there, and all of the issues that were brought up before about potential blowback come into play. So, for example, there might be a policy within the theater where they can report and talk to somebody on the board and some action might be taken. They may be able to talk with an attorney and look at a hostile workplace kind of conversation and see if there's something they can do with regard to an employment law issue. Even if they're temporary, there are issues that might be able to be discussed in that context.
Hmm. This does put the onus on the victim to take care of the problem. Can we talk a little bit about how the system is set up so that these people, and in this case, if you have an actor who's maybe getting paid a few hundred bucks a week to be in a show on top of their other job, and they're experiencing this, they're expected to take the time to go through this laborious process to file a complaint. It seems like the system is set up to be burdensome almost.
It is. The system is definitely burdensome on the victim. It's always going to be on the victim to speak up unless other bystanders happen to help them speak up or speak up on their own and let somebody know what's going on. But that's the challenge for all victims of sexual assault and sexual harassment. It really is on them to start the ball rolling, and they bear the burden of the costs and the repercussions and the retaliation that comes with it.
Catherine?
Yeah, and I wanted to point out another aspect of this systemic problem. Mm-hmm. So in my reporting around Rochester Civic Theater, one thing I learned is that Gregory Stavro had been investigated for four allegations of sexual harassment at his previous employer here in the Twin Cities. Mm-hmm. For whatever reason, those that did not come out in the hiring process at the Rochester Civic Theater. One of the employment lawyers I spoke with in doing this story, who has no dog in this fight at all, was saying this is a real gap in the system, right? Because the previous employer does not want to put themselves in a difficult legal situation by advertising that this happened. These things are supposed to be kept secret due to personnel issues, whereas the current employer may not think to ask or no to ask or want to ask those questions. So there's a real gap there when it comes to, you know, hiring people who have some sort of record on this front.
Carolyn, is that something that can be addressed legally?
Well, I think the challenges that were spoken of are very clear, that a previous employer is going to be afraid of some sort of lawsuit coming back with them. If it hasn't been any sort of public conversation, they may have signed some sort of agreement in order to keep it confidential. And there would be legal repercussions if that information was shared. Now, on the part of the people who are doing the hiring, I think there is due diligence that needs to happen on that place, too. Why, you know, what do we know about this person that we're hiring? Who do we know in the community that knows them? But they also have to be careful, too, because as they make their hiring decisions, they can't just go on hearsay. They actually have to have hard information as well. So legally, it can be extremely complex.
And I also wanted to, Catherine Richard, in your reporting on this, because of the blowback that we were talking about earlier, because of all the complications and the burden, how hard is it to get people to actually come forward and talk about these situations as a reporter who wants to expose the story?
It can be very, very difficult. I will say in the process of reporting this story, while we have three women who wanted to be on the record as they were talking about these situations they'd been in, we actually spoke with seven people total. Some of those people did not want to be on the record, but we, you know, vetted their stories nevertheless. You know, I think it's a really personal decision. I think it takes a level of trust with the reporter. I mean, I didn't just talk to these people once. I talked to them multiple times. You know, I mean, you really sort of have to create a relationship where you can say, you know, I want you to feel comfortable talking to me. I would also say that in this particular situation, I think things had reached a point where folks were not afraid to talk anymore. Letters that were at the time anonymous were written to the board to describe these situations. But then subsequently, these people did go on the record with me. I think people were fed up for a number of reasons with the theater. And so there
was also the person had left the position.
And he had left the position at this point. And I think people were very disappointed in the way that he left that position because it appeared on the surface that he had done nothing wrong. And they did not agree with that. And they felt like he was given more leeway there and more praise there as he was leaving the theater than he deserved. So I think that was a turning point.
We're talking this hour about sexual harassment in Minnesota theaters. Joining me are NPR News reporter Catherine Richard, who's covered sexual harassment allegations at the Rochester Civic Theater recently. Carolyn Palmer, she's the public and legal affairs manager at the Minnesota Coalition Against Sexual Assault. And Hannah Weideven, who's an improv artist and founder of Fair Play. We're going to continue this conversation in a little bit, and we're going to take your calls. Love to hear from you about either your experience with this, if you've been in the theater, community theater, or professional, where you felt that boundaries were crossed or that there was improper behavior. How did it affect your relationship to the theater scene, or how did it impact you after that? And what can be done about it? Do you have a sense of how the scene can change so it can be theaters can be safer spaces? Call us with your comment or question. You can reach us at 651-227-6000 in the Twin Cities or toll free at 1-800-242-2828. Let's go to the phones. We've got Sandra on the line from Georgia. Sandra, welcome. Thanks for joining the conversation.
Yeah, you're welcome. I guess I just wanted to talk about, this is years ago that this happened, but I was working at a theater, and before I went on stage every single night, the owner of the theater insisted that I hug him, and he'd whisper in my ear, you know, I've got a list of girls in my office that would love to have your job. And if
wow.
I didn't hug him hard enough, and it was a long-running show.
And where was the show?
This is in Minnesota.
This is in the Twin Cities.
Yeah, Twin Cities. Very popular theater. And I started getting sick, and it really took a toll on my health. It was so demoralizing. And this happened when I would have been in my 40s, like 41. And so it's not something that just happens to young girls. Mm-hmm. It can happen to anybody, and you don't know who to turn to. And I ended up leaving the show for health reasons, ostensibly, but mostly it was because I couldn't stand – hugging that man every single night and twice a day sometimes, because if there was a matinee. And I never auditioned for them again. And they, the theater got sold, and the next time I was in that theater, it was years later. And so, yeah, it's traumatizing. And you, the part that was really frustrating for me was that another actress in the cast, while we were rehearsing, was really insistent and really hoping that I would make my first entrance of the play stage left, because she had done a play there before. And the same thing happened to her. And she didn't tell me until after we were in the run of the show. And so there's this code of silence that it's kind of hard to break. And it's kind of, you know, I mean, I think it's great that all this stuff is coming out now. But I don't, for me, it feels just a little too late. And I don't, I also see that there will be, there's kind of a rush to out a lot of these people that have done this, but for some people, there's never going to be retribution. They'll get away with it, and they never have to do anything or face the music. And that's what's kind of sad and, like I said, demoralizing. So anyway, yeah, I think it, even though you think at the time you are strong and you can get through it, it takes its toll. And I know, me personally, I kind of stepped back from my career for a few years because it just was so awful. And I had a young child, so I thought, you know, I'm just going to focus on this for a while.
Wow. And Sandra, just to clarify, when your colleague was saying you wanted you to enter from stage left, it was to get you away from the director, or to have you on
the same
side as her? Or
No. If I entered stage left, her character had to enter stage right, and she wouldn't have to be subjected to these nightly hugs. Or if it was a matinee day, it was twice a day.
Wow.
Because it was a matinee and an evening show. And the people who worked at the theater knew about this and protected this man and let this happen for, I'm guessing, decades. Because this person owned a theater for decades. It was pretty well known. I'd bring it up after it happened to me, and other people would be like, oh, yeah. You know, but I think unless it happens to you, you don't know the dangers that are out there. And unless there's some kind of mentor in your life that is protecting you from things, you sometimes you don't know about them until you already, you know, you walk right into it. And sometimes there's a sisterhood that'll speak up, and other times you're pretty much on your own.
So what do you think needs to change the culture in theaters, Sandra?
Well, I think there needs to be more women theater owners. And I'm not saying this is only, but I mean, proportionately, there's way more instances of young women being victimized. Not that, you know, I mean, obviously there's Kevin Spacey and all that, and who knows what happened at the old Vic. But I think what needs to happen is that there needs to be more women writers. There needs to be more women's stories told, because if you look at the plays being produced, there are very few roles for women, and there are almost no roles for women that are allowed to get angry. The plays that you see, the women are accessories. They're there to tell the man's story. So there needs to be more stories written by women. There needs to be more women directors. The proportions are ridiculous when you look at how many women direct plays.
And also, just a side note, if there are a few parts for women, that means there are a majority of men backstage and, you know, in the theater space. And so women are in the minority to begin with, which creates a different dynamic, power dynamic as well.
Way different power dynamic. Yeah. I can remember during rehearsal of the play where I eventually left, during the rehearsal, I offered a suggestion, and all the men in the room turned and stared at me, and there was about a 10 seconds worth of silence. I turned red in the face, and I realized, oh, I'm just here to keep quiet and do what they want me to do. I'm not in a collaborative situation.
Sandra,
that happens
Yeah.
Frequently.
Thank you so much for sharing your story. I really appreciate it. And I'd like I'd like to get Hannah Weidevin's response. I saw you nodding your head and supporting what she was saying about more women in leadership.
Well, more women in leadership positions, and also learning and understanding how to tell stories that are more dynamic than the ones we've grown up with is very important and needs to happen in theater. It's not going to happen other places. They say life imitates art, right? It's not going to happen other places if we can't make it something that we commonly see. Even when you're improvising, often stories will fall into the line of the male hero, and the woman plays a sidekick character who is used as a prop throughout the show. I've frequently been put in positions like that, and you try your best to work your way out of it. But the expectations are just built up that this is how it's done, that stories are told by men for men about men.
Hmm. Carolyn Palmer, in terms of the liability of a theater space for allowing this sort of behavior to continue, I mean, we talk about the carrot and the stick. Is there a way to scare straight some of these theater spaces to make sure that they are protecting the women who are there?
Well, certainly whenever you do see a theater get called out and what kind of attention is being paid to it and how that affects their business, that probably the bottom line is the way you scare people the most, unfortunately. But I think the more people come to speak out and the more they are seeing that this is a positive thing to do for the community and that it strengthens the community, I think that helps as well. But we definitely want to make sure that they are providing more training, that they are giving information in their space about where to go to get help. And also for those folks who feel very alone, and it is often a very isolating experience and they can't talk to anybody in their workplace, we do really highly recommend that they reach out to a sexual assault advocacy center. They can go to rapehelpmen.org and talk with somebody confidentially and work through some of these issues.
In talking about this and leading up to the show, there are theaters out there who have very strong sexual assault policies and sexual harassment policies in place. Does having that document in place, what does that do? Is that enough? Is in terms of enforcing, or is it a matter of being? What does it take to actually shift the culture?
It's absolutely not enough to have a policy. You might just have a policy, put it in the handbook or put it up on the wall and never pay attention to it again. You need to include training along with it, and you need to show people in the workplace that if the policy is violated, that actually something will be done about it, even if it's the very popular director of the theater. And even more so probably when it's somebody who has that big charismatic presence in the community. But they have to take action. Otherwise, it's just meaningless.
Let's go back to the phones. We've got Christine on the line in Minneapolis. Christine, welcome to the program. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thank you.
Mm-hmm. What do you want to share?
Oh, well, my experiences happened at a professional theater, and it happened with other actors. That was kind of my main experiences. It was a long-running show, and interestingly enough, was a combination of scripted theater and improvisation. So it was interactive with the audience, and we all signed something saying that we committed to staying in character at all times, and if we were ever caught breaking character, we could immediately be fired. As in, you're not even finishing the show; you're fired. And it had happened. We'd all witnessed it. And some actors took advantage of that. And it was just a handful of different occurrences where I was put in a position where I felt I needed to say yes and I did not feel safe nor comfortable.
Mm. And for you, how did you deal with it? I mean, once these things, you notice that these things started happening, were you able to talk to anybody about it?
The very first time it happened, I was fortunate enough to have another actor witness it, and she pulled me aside in the dressing room. I'm still emotional about it, so I apologize. It's been years, but it still really affects me. And she pulled me aside and she said, "That was wrong. and you need to tell somebody. And I said, oh, gosh, I don't want to. It's just what you guys have been talking about. I didn't want to be labeled as difficult. I loved my job, and I certainly didn't want to risk losing it. And so, but she said, no, you need to say something, or I will say something about it. And I thought, okay, I need to say something. So I did. I went in, and I spoke with the producers and the director, and in that particular instance, the other actor was reassigned. It just so happened that this company was producing shows in other cities, and he was reassigned to a show that was not in the Twin Cities.
So the problem got moved away.
I went, you know, up the ladder. I felt more confident going to somebody because I had done it before. I went to the stage manager, and he told me that I simply misunderstood and I didn't understand this actor's sense of humor, and that essentially I was wrong. And I fought back and said, no, I'm not wrong. This has happened a lot. I don't feel comfortable. I'm not okay with this. And he was like, well, okay, but, you know, and kind of brushed me aside. So then I went to the company manager, and she was better. But and eventually brought me into the director and the producers, and then that actor was fired.
Christine, it just sounds like you had to go through so much trouble, and you had to sort of put your case forward several times in order to get a result. How did that feel in terms of that process? First, there was the actual event itself that's demoralizing, but then to have to work so. It sounded like you had to really work uphill to get people to believe you.
That's exactly how it felt. That's exactly how it felt. And you know, it's very difficult when these people that are perpetrating, I guess, when they are so well respected and highly regarded at the theater or in the community. We're a small community, and when they are so. Or what you believe to be highly regarded, it does feel like an uphill fight, and it does feel like you're the only one. And it was very hard, but I thank so much that the person who insisted that I go and tell, or that she would tell for me, I don't know that I ever would have had she not so strongly encouraged me to do it, to help others so that others wouldn't have to go through it.
Mm-hmm.
She helped me realize that, yep, it's a fight, and yep, it's uncomfortable, but it needs to be done to help everybody.
Well, Christine, thank you so much for calling and sharing your story. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for doing this story. I really, really appreciate it.
You bet. Hannah Weideman, listening to Christine's stories, did some things resonate for you there?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the reason that we created Fair Play was to help become the voice in circumstances like this, and to encourage people to have a place to go and say, hey, this happened to me. What do you think? Is this something I should report? Is this something I should talk to somebody about? And to help increase some of that social pressure on the theaters to say, look, there's more than just one person watching what's happening here. In fact, there's a whole group of us, and we all have something to say about it.
Now, you have, in the past, you've actually named names. You've gone public with people who have been considered troubled, you know, problems in the community. Are there concerns that whether you've got your facts straight? And because you're hearing this, you know, this is third party. How do you know that what you've got is good intel? And are there concerns that you might, you know, name somebody who's actually innocent?
Yeah, and that's not, naming names is not something we frequently do. It's actually something we've only done once so far. And in that circumstance, we had so many reports come into us, and also it started to bleed into other parts of the theater community, and lots of people were talking about it. In fact, we were contacted by a reporter. We were contacted by a couple of lawyers saying, do you know more information about this? And a lot of people were putting pressure on us to make a statement about it. And so in that case, we took a step forward and decided to make that statement before even going to the theaters or anything like that. And yes, there is definitely concern. We tried to be as clear with our language as we could, making sure that we said alleged incidents. But we know that we're putting our neck out there, and we know that the system is rigged against us. And I don't know, at some point you just have to take the risk.
Carolyn Palmer, when you look at the situation here, you have a volunteer organization that's created, that's formed. Doesn't that speak to the fact that maybe something's lacking within the system to handle this?
Absolutely. I'm so impressed with the work that's being done. And so often this happens in communities because the system doesn't work well. It does take the people who are actually there, living it, doing the work, and supporting one another to do this kind of grassroots organization.
So listening to Christine's story from earlier and the uphill battle she faced, is there a way to mitigate that? She talked about the person who came forward and who witnessed and encouraged her. What advice would you give people who witness sexual harassment, who actually aren't the victim but see it happening? What can they do?
Well, I think they can do a couple of things. First of all, reaching out and supporting the victim is very important, and being willing to be there for the victim as they decide whether or not they're going to move through the process. At the end of the day, a lot of it is the victim's choice about how much they want to share. But if somebody is witnessing something in the theater and they know that it's having an impact, it's very important that they, as bystanders, talk up and follow whatever process they have in their theater to give more light on the issue.
Catherine?
Yeah, and I want to talk a little bit about how we saw that play out at the Rochester Theater, because I think there are some things that happened there that employment lawyers would say is exactly the wrong way to handle it. So the first complaint about Gregory Stavro was brought to three board members shortly after he started in 2008. I should probably point out that this complaint was brought by a woman who now actually works at Minnesota Public Radio. Mm. Total coincidence. In any event, their response was, well, do you want to confront him? And she was young. She doesn't know how this works. And she said, well, okay, I guess if that's what you do, okay. And she was asked to confront him, and he denied it completely. You know, in retrospect, those board members who were involved in that discussion, who I was able to speak with, see that that was not the right way to handle it. But I also think that maybe board members simply are not trained sometimes to understand these situations. The second complaint actually came from someone who was observing years later.
Let's go back to the phones. We've got Sarah Rasmussen on the line. Sarah Rasmussen is the artistic director of the Jungle Theater. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Marianne. Thanks so much for making space for this conversation today. It's really important.
Absolutely. What would you like to share? How would you want to weigh in?
I think this conversation is about systems in our organizations is really important, but I also think it's really important to be mindful of the stories that we're putting on stage and how women are represented in those stories. Because in my experience, when women have very few lines or they're asked to play very historically stereotypical characters, it only exacerbates their lack of agency in a rehearsal room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was something we were talking about earlier this hour, that we need more female playwrights, more female theater directors. How do you work to create a safe space at the Jungle Theater, Sarah?
Absolutely. I think that spaces change when there's more gender parity in the room, when women feel like they have other women in the room who are collaborating alongside of them. I think that absolutely more women directors, more women in leadership, it creates a different culture of agency, and that's, I think, key in my experience to moving us forward to a healthier place as an industry.
All right, Sarah, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Yeah, Hannah, as you look to the future, what do you want to see change in the Minnesota theater scene?
Oh, I really think that the issues start in the classroom, which is where most of us will be trained. I have experienced harassment from teachers and have witnessed harassment from teachers to students and between students in classrooms, and none of that was ever addressed. And what happens then is you start to accumulate these experiences and you start to change your understanding of what your role is. Like, my boundaries, I think, are pretty clear in my normal life, but somehow when I was doing improv, I was losing my ability to stand up for myself. And I think that started in the classroom experiences. So I think my primary hope would be to see theater communities and improv communities and all other types of performance communities focus on what happens when people first start and what does that look like? How do we usher people into our systems?
Thanks to all three of you. This has been a really engaging hour, and I know the conversation is not over. We will be talking about this in the weeks and months to come, so this is just one part of that conversation. But we've been talking this hour about sexual harassment in Minnesota theaters. We've been joined by NPR News reporter Catherine Richert, Carolyn Palmer. She's the Public and Legal Affairs Manager at the Minnesota Coalition Against Sexual Assault. And we've been joined by Hannah Wideven. She's an improv artist and the founder of Fair Play. And of course, we're always interested in hearing your stories. We are going to continue reporting on this. This is an issue that keeps on going. I'm Marianne Combs. You're listening to Minnesota Public Radio News.